The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the dulcetly toned Jonathan Strickland.
Why, thank you, Ariel. And in return, I have a question for you. Okay, Ariel, you're a superhero. I mean,
yay!
We already knew that, but no, you're a superhero. What does your mild-mannered alter ego do for a living?
Well, you see, this is tricky, Jonathan, because in the past, I have actually written theatrical bios about myself that have said, by day, a mild-mannered admin, and at night, super thespian. But I think I want to switch it up. I think that my mild-mannered day job for a... No, you know what? I don't. I like my own actual personal backstory. So I think that my mild-mannered alter ego would be a preschool teacher and struggling community theater artist.
Just to go back
to a little bit of my actual past.
She can save the world, but can she land a role in Evita?
I probably don't want to land a role in a community theater version of Evita.
I think that would be a spectacular thing to see, though.
Fair enough.
A circus. Oh, what a show. What about you? Oh, I'm glad you asked. I think I'd want to be a barista. And the superhero is just really determined to be the best barista that superhero can be when they're not off being a superhero. Like, they treat it seriously and take it very hard on themselves when they misspell someone's name on a cup, for example.
Well, let me tell you, I have been a barista. I loved it, but it's a very serious job.
Yeah. Yeah. I at one point I was trying to think of a job that would have you locked down at all hours so that you could not go off and be a superhero. And thus the conflict would be well, I want to save the world, but I have to, I'm an IT professional and I'm on call.
I was going to say, yeah, customer service would do that. But that's funny because you've written mild-mannered superhero stuff and that falls right in line with that.
Yes. No, I wrote a series for the Atlanta Radio Theater Company called Mildly Exciting Tales of Astonishment. In fact, there was an episode in which two characters are about to face off against an incoming robot invasion. And just before the battle is to begin, one of them realizes that he forgot to call in sick to his job and so is hurriedly trying to do so before all chaos breaks out around them. And that was a lot of fun. Like, I had a lot of fun playing with superhero tropes in that series, taking things that are really much, pretty much cliches in the superhero world, and then putting them within the context of the mundane and just pointing out how absolutely ludicrous they can be. Maybe one day I'll bring that back. They still occasionally do those scripts.
They're actually working on re-recording some of them, I think, to release on YouTube.
Yeah, that's exciting. And so. And I've talked about going back and writing some more, because some of them, like, I wrote those more than a decade ago, like almost two decades ago, probably. And some of the jokes I think I need to update because I'm a more aware and compassionate person now than I was then. And there were some jokes I made that I probably wouldn't make today. Nothing terrible, but there's some where I'm like, you know what? That's kind of punching down. I could write better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but you're not the only person who thinks that way. You know, there are plenty of other great pieces of art that could use some updating, like a lot of musical theater.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. No. And some of it, we've seen updates to musical theater, but yes, you are very correct. Like, I think of the musical South Pacific. That one, I mean, granted, it's set in a very specific time, but hoo boy, what a show. But the reason you bring that up, Ariel, is because we now know when Broadway is going to reopen.
Yes, and that is mid-September-ish of this year, which I don't know if I'll be ready to go back then, even though I'm fully vaccinated now. Thank you. But I'm excited that it's happening.
I'm getting slightly more comfortable being out places than I was before, although I still wear a mask when I go out. Because I want to encourage that behavior. But I think I might be comfortable enough to do it, assuming that everyone is clearly following procedures to keep people safe. Specifically, to keep all the people in the who work at the theater, whether it's the cast or the crew or the front of house staff, all of those people safe. Mm-hmm. Because those are the people who are coming into contact with crowds, you know, sometimes 8 times a week if they're doing a full run of shows.
Yeah, yeah. And we know that the Theater Alliance is really trying to make those positive changes happen before they go back. So here's hoping that they're on the right track. You know, a lot of the shows that they've mentioned coming back are not surprising, like Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations, Hamilton, Jagged Little Pill, Six, things that have come out recently or are really popular. But I know you and I were both talking. We're kind of surprised that we haven't heard anything about Hadestown yet.
Yeah, it's early because this news broke the day we're recording this. By the way, we're recording this on May 11th, just in case you're curious. And we just heard about this today, so it may very well be that within the next day or two, we'll learn more. Because I actually had tickets to Hadestown before the pandemic happened. And yeah. You know, they originally rescheduled me once, but then after that, you know, they pushed it back into September of last year. And when it became clear that that was not going to happen either, they said, you know what, we're not going to try and do this again because we can't predict when we're going to be able to reopen. And it's a lot of work shifting tickets around. So they just said, we will let you know and give you a chance to book tickets early once they go on sale again. And I haven't heard anything yet.
I'm hoping that the shuffle allows Beetlejuice to come back in a new theater because they were going to close right after I was going to see them, but I didn't see them. So now I hope that they are able to stay open a little bit longer so I can. But if not, I really want to see this new musical that is coming from off-Broadway to on-Broadway called Romeo and Bernadette, musical tale of Verona and Brooklyn, because that sounds hilarious.
Yeah, it's obviously based or inspired by Romeo and Juliet, but rather than the tragedy of Romeo and Juliet, this one sounds like a comedy. So it's not like the West Side Story take on Romeo and Juliet, right? Like that one has some comedy in it, but it's still a tragedy. Spoiler alert if you aren't familiar with West Side Story, I guess. But yeah, it's based off Romeo and Juliet, so you should know it does not end well. But Romeo and Bernadette turns out to be the daughter of a crime lord. And so apparently has a real potty mouth on her.
Yeah. It just looks to be funny. I mean, you can't put too much humor in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh no. I mean, I've played Juliet. I know all about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if I don't get to see Beetlejuice, maybe I'll get to see Romeo and Bernadette. Maybe I can drag my husband out to that one. He's not a huge Shakespeare fan like I am. So something else that I will have to make sure to see is the second Knives Out. I know we've talked about that, but news recently broke that has made me a little bit more excited about it.
Yeah, we learned that Dave Bautista, the pro wrestler turned Drax the Destroyer, is on the cast of Knives Out 2, which I think is great. Like, I remember when he first started going out to acting gigs, I wasn't sure what to think because I had seen him back in his wrestling days when he was doing that all the time. And yeah, he could cut a promo and stuff, but I never really saw like acting chops from him. But he's been in so much stuff, including like Blade Runner, and he actually has range, like surprising range. And his Drax is phenomenal. So I'm very much looking forward to him playing. I don't know. I don't know what it'll be in Knives Out 2. I kind of hope it'll be a big, strong dude in some parts. I mean, I hope that he plays against type.
I mean, he says, well, it's interesting because he actually took, there's an article on Polygon that I found right before we got on to record this where he's talking about his career, how excited he is that it's taking off in his 50s. You know, Hollywood has often been known to be a little bit ageist.
Well, more for women than for men, but yes.
More for women than for men, but you know, he actually took on the Army of Dead, the role he has in Army of the Dead that's coming out later this month because it was more nuanced and serious. And so I feel like he's trying to get this more dramatic career going, but Drax isn't that. And I think he said that the Knives Out role in the Polygon interview will be a little bit wackier because, I mean, that's what Knives Out is. But he's still excited about it because of the caliber of actor that the first movie got. The second one, you know, it's still a really great role. It's a great opportunity. So I'm really excited to hear that he is still taking on comedic roles because he's so brilliant at it. Even as he's pursuing a serious career,
right? And I like that he is playing stuff beyond the cliched action film genre, right? Because that's what we typically see. We usually see these folks like from professional wrestling just take on either straight out action films, which run the gamut between mediocre to watchable, or they're playing, you know, against type to comedic effect. And it's usually pretty painful to watch, like watching Hulk Hogan play the Tooth Fairy, for example. Mm.
Yeah,
and there are a few people who obviously can branch beyond that. The Rock is one of them, right? And yeah, it looks like Batista might be another one.
I agree. Now, you know, that does come with some sad news. He says that he is done playing Drax after Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and Thor Love and Thunder. He says that things will start sagging any second now. I don't know if I believe that.
Yeah, talking about his bod. Yeah, no, this dude is like, he's built like a brick house. I mean, he's just like, he is solid, absolutely solid. But yeah, no, he's, you know, he's talked about wanting to move on from that, which I totally respect. It is sad because his character, while never a like integral part of any of the movies that he's been in, is always a welcome addition. Drax has consistently been an entertaining figure. You know, between like Drax and Nebula having misunderstandings about stuff, you get a lot of great humor in those Marvel films. I think it would be, you know, sad to see him go, but at the same time, I think that as an actor, he should totally be able to chase after whatever he wants. It was really cute seeing his exchange online about leaving it behind and saying someone else will play the part. But when he said, you know, like, you know, some other guy can play Drax, what was the response?
James Gunn said nobody else could play him.
Yeah.
But I also respect your choice to retire from the role. Now, that being said, I think James Gunn's original plan was to only do three Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. I mean, it's here's the other thing is that we know in the comic books, the Guardians of the Galaxy is a team that has had lots of different members over the years. And so you can have a totally different lineup from one thing to the next, kind of like the Avengers, how the Avengers have a different lineup now because of Iron Man no longer being part of the team and Captain America having retired on the moon. So
yeah, well, and beyond that, I mean, if you think about Drax's motivating factor, it was to get revenge on Thanos, and now Thanos is gone.
Yeah, so he could retire.
In a nice, hopefully happy manner.
Yeah, maybe he and the empath or can end
Mantis.
Up having, yeah, Mantis, he and Mantis can have long and confusing conversations with each other.
I hope to get a lot of that in Guardians of the Galaxy 3 at the very least. Mm-hmm. You know, and they've hinted at other characters. So I'm excited to see where it goes, even though I will be sad to see him go. I'm also excited about some casting for the Borderlands movie. It's an action movie with a not cliche casting choice in it.
Yeah, Penn Jillette has joined the cast. He's going to be playing a preacher, apparently, which very much against type for Penn Jillette, but also really funny because Penn Jillette appears in Borderlands 3 as a villain, one of the villains you can face in Borderlands 3. Along with his cohort, Teller. Teller will not be in Borderlands, the film, as far as we know. This is one of those movies where, like, I keep looking at that cast list, and I wonder what the heck is happening. because that game is so just ridiculous and and meandering. And I mean, at its heart, it has a very simple story, but it's a very simple story that's told throughout like little bits and pieces as you're just thrown on various little side quests and looking for the next big gun. And yet you look at that cast list and you're thinking, what is happening here?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's very interesting casting. I'm exceptionally happy that a lot of it is for an action movie and for a game where all the characters seem so young to me that they're using a lot of more seasoned actors in it. Like Jamie Lee Curtis and Cate Blanchett and Jack Black.
And Gina Gershon.
So, yeah.
She's in my Moxie. Holy crap. That's going to be, oh, okay.
It's going to be good. Like, I don't know. It's going to be good. I am tentatively very, very excited about this. And I'm hoping it's like an adult version of Jumanji kind of. So I know that that's not the storyline, but that's the caliber that I'm hoping for.
I'm very curious to see what sort of tone they strike because the games are obviously very tongue in cheek comedic. And it would feel odd if the movie tries to go, you know, like Mad Max, but zanier, you know?
I mean, that's what it's going to be, right?
Yeah. But you know, like, well, I guess maybe it'll work better as a movie that way. I don't know. I can't really say this is just so hard for me to wrap my brain around.
Yeah, I guess, you'll just have to wait and see. Something else that might be hard to wrap your brain around. What about the idea of having animal human hybrid children after an apocalypse event or a pandemic?
I mean, I've already said I'm not having kids, so not really.
So really hard to wrap your brain around.
Yeah. If I came home to a koala baby, I'd be like, what happened? Yeah. You're referring to Sweet Tooth.
Yes. Which is a little bit of a dark DC comic about exactly what we said, kids who are being born as an animal person hybrid after a pandemic happens. And then humans are wary of them and scared of them and
hunt them down.
And this show focuses on one of those children. It's a hybrid deer boy named Gus. The interesting thing to me is that it's being helmed by a bunch of really great people, but among them, Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, who are actually trying to make it more lighthearted so that families can watch it together and it can be a little bit uplifting, which for a DC property is very refreshing for me to hear.
Yeah. They are executive producers on the series. And I like that too. I like the idea of trying to create something that's not just dark and gritty and dour and a downer, right? Like, you've heard me say that a billion times, that I like my escapist fiction to help me escape. And considering the last year and a half everybody has had, I think having a few things that can perhaps focus on stories that make you feel good when it's all over, that'd be nice. And for it to be genuine, right? Not just a cheap cash-in of let's throw a happy ending on there and it'll make everyone go home happy. Like I want it to be earned, not just, you know, not just a pat ending.
Yeah. Well, and the trailer for this makes me feel like there's going to be a lot of tense moments, but it's also looks so endearing. No pun intended.
I'm excited. I had no idea about this before you put it on the lineup. So this was totally new to me, and I'm very excited to learn more. I wasn't familiar with the comic book series either, so maybe it'll get me into looking at that. Like I thought my comic book days were pretty much over, and then Invincible happened. So I might be getting pulled back in. Like the last thing that I remember collecting, we actually have mentioned in our show notes, because you said, next, let's have someone do an adaptation of Bone, please. Well, Bone was the last thing I collected, and Bone is a phenomenal fantasy epic series. Highly recommended.
Yeah, I like it too. And it's hard for me to follow comics when it's the main ones like Justice League and Avengers, because there's so much out there. But smaller ones like these are much easier to pick up and start and digest. And I'm excited about them. It's reinvigorating my love of comics. Not that it ever went away, but it's making it stronger. Well, now we need to take a quick break. And afterwards, we're actually going to talk about some more news, but it's going to lead into a conversation.
That's out of this world.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Hey, Ariel.
Yes?
So, you also picked in our news a little news item about how pretty soon we could be having some private space flights to allow people to become space tourists. Very wealthy people, but well, people all the same.
Yes, yes. Both Blue Origin and SpaceX are looking to start space tourism this year. And NASA is saying that their first trip with civilians could take place as early as January. And I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, okay. So let's talk about a couple of other little things first. First of all, do you know anyone who's been to space?
I don't, but I know you have. You braggy McBraggerson.
I was just going to check before I started talking about my close personal friend, Richard Garriott. Actually, he's not my close personal friend. I chatted with him for a while. Like we knew each other. We met through the convention circuit because my dad was a guest. Richard Garriott, who was the creator of the Ultima series of computer games. His alter ego is Lord British. He also was a guest at a lot of these conventions, and he was one of, I believe, 7 civilians to pay an exorbitant amount of money to fly up on a Russian space capsule to dock with the International Space Station. So he actually spent time aboard the International Space Station, which is kind of neat. And now we are reaching a point where people who are not potentially not as wealthy as that can go. Still very expensive, or at least it's very likely to be. Before, if you wanted to try and experience something like this, the closest you could typically manage is to go on one of those parabolic airplane flights where they fly in these big parabolic arcs, which end up simulating weightlessness. Mm-hmm. Technically, the plane is falling faster than you are, so you're kind of
that's so frightening.
Floating. Yeah. But that was the closest you could come, and now we're going to get into stuff that goes either into low Earth orbit or close to it. So the conversation then is, would you go?
I mean, like, it seems interesting, but I hate roller coasters, so re-entry just seems absolutely miserable to me.
Well, not just re-entry. I mean, launch would be really rough on you. That's when you would be experiencing serious G's.
So I know that astronauts have to go through a ton of training to go into space, right?
Yeah.
Kids go to space camp to try to do it. So as a tourist, would you have to go through that same rigorous amount of training to...
Likely not, because you wouldn't be expected to actually control anything or conduct any experiments. You would also not be up there for an appreciable amount of time. Most of these experiences you're looking at are things that take course over like half a day and maybe include, you know, an hour worth of experience where you're kind of in space or close to it. So in those cases, you wouldn't need to have quite that level of training. You know, of course, in the early days of the astronaut program, no one was really sure what the rigors were going to be of space travel. Like, right, what was it? What kind of effect was it going to have on the body? So astronauts needed to go through all that training to be as healthy as they possibly could be before going up into space, because there was no telling what could happen.
Well, I mean, would they at least put you into like the centrifuge thing to see if you're going to vomit into your space helmet or pass out or
anything? You're totally going to vomit. That's just going to happen. I mean, like the parabolic flights that I was talking about, you know what the nickname is for those, right?
No.
The Vomit Comet.
Oh, I thought that was just roller coasters.
Nope. The Vomit Comet. That's what they call those parabolic flights, because you know, that experience of being weightless, it's very disorienting. Your brain is having trouble figuring this out about how, based upon the visual stimulation you get, what you should be feeling, but you're not feeling that because you're weightless or in microgravity. Then your brain says, I don't like it. Send a note to the stomach. Eject.
Yeah. Okay. So all that being said, maybe once they figure out how to make launch and reentry gentler, I might consider it. What about you?
So I would do it in a heartbeat if I had the ridiculous amount of wealth it would take for me to be able to do it.
They are auctioning off some seats, so maybe you could win one.
Yeah, because, I mean, most of these, you look at them and you're like, oh, yeah, no, the going rate is for like $250,000. That's a house. I can't pay for a full house price to just go up into space. I would do it if I had the opportunity, the means to do it where, like, it wasn't going to break me financially. I would do it because I'm very curious about it, and I think it would be an exciting thing. I'd love to be able to look back and see the curvature of the Earth. I think that would be super cool. A lot of people talk about it being kind of a life-changing experience when you do that. Like, you get this new perspective, because when you look back at the Earth, you realize, hey, I'm looking at 99.999999% of everyone. The only people I'm not looking at right now are either on this ship or on the International Space Station. Everyone else who is alive, I'm looking at right now. That's an incredible thing.
That is pretty incredible. So I guess along those lines, so you'd go into space, but would you like go to Mars? Because they're talking about sending people to Mars.
Yeah, no.
Setting up colonies there, which to me just seems like an awful waste of resources for a rock that's not very hospitable to us.
Well, I mean, like, there's things we could learn on Mars that would be really useful to us in the long term. But
certainly.
I don't think of it as a place where you'd want to have, you know, like a permanent colony or like, I don't think setting up a permanent colony and have a Heinlein-like Martian civilization would make much sense. I would not go to Mars, because when one of those people talking an awful lot about going to Mars is Elon Musk, who also just casually mentions that a lot of people are probably going to die in the process. I'm like, you know what? When the guy who's bankrolling it is like, yeah, people are going to die, I'm like, pass, hard pass.
So like, accidents happen, you know, car accidents happen, the Challenger happened, things like that. But the effort, the goal is to do everything you can to keep those negative things from happening. So
yes,
I wouldn't want to go to Mars until the goal, expected goal and end result was to bring me home successfully.
Well, and see, that's the thing. There's so many differences between NASA and SpaceX, and I can't sum it up to just this one thing, but this is one of the major differences. Or rather, you could say the difference between NASA and Elon Musk. And that is, NASA goes to extraordinary lengths to try and ensure the safety of everyone in the program, right? Like, that the story of Apollo 13 is a story about NASA coming together to rescue three people who were aboard a capsule, and they could have been lost. NASA could have said, like, this is a tragedy. There's no way to get them back. But everyone with all their being worked to get them back home safely. And they did get back home. And that's a great part of the mission of NASA. Then you have Elon Musk, who says, yeah, people are probably going to die. And it's such a offhand, casual, and callous thing to say that it makes me feel like and I don't want to put words in his mouth or give him motivations that he may not have, but it feels like the checking the box of sending people to Mars is more important than the people. And as long as that's the case, I don't want any part of it.
I definitely have the same feels about that. But that leads me to a more left field question. Okay, so we don't want to necessarily permanently colonize Mars, right? It would take so many resources to make it a healthy place to live. Mm-hmm. What do you feel about taking planets like Mars, if we determine that there's no life on Mars, which I think there's bacteria or something? I don't recall.
Well, they're looking for that. That's what they're looking for.
What are your feels on taking a planet that has no life and turning it into like a trash planet?
100% against it. 100% against it. Yeah. NASA's against it too. I mean, like there are treaties out there that specifically state like you are not meant to contaminate other planets. Like that is a bad idea. It is, you know, it's an irresponsible thing to do. And there are other ways to deal with the issue of trash here on Earth that one, don't require you to shoot anything off into space, and two, are more economical than shooting stuff off into space, but they do cost money. So what's weird to me is that people would talk about this as a potential solution when there are better, more practical solutions here on Earth that just require us to invest in them to make them happen. Mm-hmm. But because the planet thing, I think, is far enough out as a possibility, they'd say like, oh, let's just push it till later. That's a later Earth problem. I don't want to have to deal with that. Let like the generation behind me or the generation behind them deal with it when it's reached crisis levels and they have no choice but to do something about it. We can do things about it right now that don't involve, you know, offloading our garbage to some other planet.
Well, and to be fair, I don't know how many people are actually like legitimately thinking of that again. The resources it would take to do that. It's something that has been explored in science fiction, media, and stuff.
Superman
like that.
4 threw all of the world's nuclear arms into the sun.
Look, I watched Avenue 5, which is an HBO show. I'm guessing you have not watched it.
I have not.
About a space cruise ship and all of the possible things that could go wrong. It's a very dark comedy.
Is this
so
the one
funny,
that
but it's dark.
Is Hugh Laurie?
Hugh Laurie's in it.
I have seen the first episode of that series.
It's a cumulative episode, a series, so you should watch the rest of the episodes if it at least piqued your interest a little bit. But it shows all of the things that could go wrong, including like putting waste into space and the negative impacts that could have. And so I was curious about your thoughts on it hypothetically. Like I said, I don't know if anybody's actually considering it.
Well, if they are, they gotta knock that off.
Yes, they do. Well, I really enjoyed this conversation, and I know that you could probably talk about it for years on end between your technical knowledge and your geekitude knowledge and your sci-fi knowledge, but we don't have years on end for this episode, so we're going to take another quick break.
Okay, Ariel, so we've got a couple of other news items. We've really peppered them throughout the episode this time that end up informing what our mashup is today. One of those news items is that the Marvel released a series of posters for the Black Widow film. And I love the posters. I think the posters look great.
Me too. It shows you that you can have dark, serious characters and still have a color palette.
Not only that, but that you can have characters who are women, but the costumes don't all like fall into the super stereotypical sexy superhero, you know, outfit. Like it's not like plunging necklines. Now, granted, those outfits hug the curves, but they're not. But it's not like to the point where it's, you know, gratuitous.
Yeah, they feel realistic. They feel like motorcycling outfits.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of the characters, Florence Pugh, her outfit seems very tactical. The most improbable thing about it is that it's white and you can't keep it clean, but that's probably just me.
And I love the look of the Taskmaster. I was very curious how they were going to make the Taskmaster look because in the comics he's, you know, got a very cartoony skull mask. And they make it look kind of like a motorcycle helmet, like with a with like a holographic type of visor on it. And I love his sword and shield. I told Ariel before we did the show that he has sort of a Boba Fett kind of thing going on.
He certainly does. So we'll post the link in the show notes so you can look at them if you haven't seen them yet. So that is one of our mashup properties is Scarlet. Or sorry, not Scarlet. Why did I say Scarlet? Black Widow, because Scarlett Johansson. That's why. So one of our mashup properties is Black Widow, and the other is SpongeBob.
Now, why did you pick SpongeBob? What was in the news that prompted SpongeBob?
So there was a four-year-old boy in New York who ordered $2,618.85 worth of SpongeBob SquarePants popsicles.
Party at that kid's house.
Yeah, I don't think his mom knew or expected it. So he ended up getting 51 cases, 918 individual popsicles from Amazon, sent to his aunt's house, and then Amazon would not take them back.
So did the story say how he managed to order these? Was it like on the computer or was it like through Alexa or?
I don't know. There's a post on Instagram that I didn't get into. But I know that they set up a GoFundMe to kind of recoup the losses, and they have well more than recouped the losses. Yeah, so
that kid's going to be able to get some cupcakes to go along with those popsicles.
Yes, definitely.
But I mean, just in time for the summer too. That kid's got it made.
Yeah. He's going to have so many friends, but you know, we'll also post the link to that article, and that article has a link to the Instagram story so you can read all about it. But that leads us into our Black Widow SpongeBob mashup.
Yep, that's why that happened.
That's why that happened, or is happening. So I'm gonna go first.
Go for it, Ariel.
All right, this is called The Red Pineapple. After Natasha Romanoff told the KGB Das Vidania, they devised a plan to keep tabs on their most formidable ex-operative. They tried sending agents to befriend her, kill her, and seduce her, and each time she saw through each agent's ruse and eliminated them. The KGB knew that sending any one would trip her trigger, so they then turned to their deep science division known as Leviathan to help them solve their problems. And Leviathan had a plan so crazy that they knew it would work. Instead of sending someone, they would send something to keep tabs on Natasha. You see, a week before, Leviathan was trying to reanimate a corpse with a super secret science laser, but some dang fool tripped on the cord and the laser swung to point at a TV in the next lab room where they were brainwashing a victim with SpongeBob SquarePants episodes. When the laser struck the TV, it sucked the characters of SpongeBob SquarePants out of the TV, SpongeBob and Patrick to be exact, and into the real world. Leviathan, having these new assets, was looking for some way to use them, and this was the perfect opportunity. They would brainwash the fools and train them as sleeper agents to listen to, report back, and if need be, eliminate Black Widow. Bonus, SpongeBob and Patrick could use their own bodies to clean up any mess before anyone found it if the last option had to be taken. So, desperate and out of ideas, the KGB agreed. They brainwashed SpongeBob and Patrick, which was easy. Training them in martial arts was a breeze, but weaponry was difficult because no one was willing to volunteer to be in the room with SpongeBob when he had a weapon in his hand and he kept shouting "we" and pointing it at everyone. However, Patrick was a whiz at weapons. See, turns out Patrick has a temper and he's just like a teeny tiny little Hulk. Once trained, they put SpongeBob and Patrick into sleeper mode and sent them to Natasha as a care package, which included a dis sponge, Bob, of course, a foot pumice, Patrick, a digital picture frame with some jellyfish on it to help her relax, and a chocolate bar. They labeled it as a package from Bruce Banner with a card reading, "to help you get used to normal life," with a little winky face to sell it at the end. And Natasha, while thinking it was a little weird, was none the wiser and put all the items to use in her house. And things worked well for the KGB for a while. Every night when Natasha was asleep, the Black Widow Project would tap into the picture frame, say the secret code word Wumbo, to activate SpongeBob and Patrick. The two would report back on what they had heard Natasha say and where they saw her going each day, and after some determination to decipher the Sponge and Star's reports, the KGB and crew thought they knew what she was up to and soon planned to have the Sponge and Starfish neutralize her. But before they could complete their operation, something happened. Black Widow was sitting at home one day watching TV, eating a dozen donuts for dinner, which was her favorite thing to do. Don't judge her. She burns a lot of calories being a hero. And she fell asleep. While she was asleep, SpongeBob SquarePants came on the TV, and the familiarity of home awoke SpongeBob and Patrick out of their brainwashed state. They realized what was going on, and after they finished off the remaining donuts that Natasha had left untouched and left a thank you note for finding them so useful, SpongeBob and Patrick shipped themselves back to Russia and exacted revenge on the entire nefarious organization that had brainwashed them. The Avengers never knew what took down Leviathan, the Red Room, and the KGB, but they were glad to have one less thing to worry about. Natasha, however, never figured out where her donuts went.
Cute.
It doesn't really have anything to do super with Avengers, Black Widow, or SpongeBob lore.
Well, don't worry. I got you covered, Ariel.
I figured you might.
All right, get ready, because this one's a long one. No, I'm kidding. This one's super short. Here we go. I don't have a title for this one, so we'll just say, getting on top of Bikini Bottom. Here we go. Mr. Krabs has a problem. Someone has broken into his office safe at the Krusty Krab and stolen his precious formula. Of course, his suspicion immediately falls on Plankton, owner of the competing restaurant, the Chum Bucket. Going into full panic mode, he calls upon Earth's mightiest heroes to help out, despite the fact that his fry cook SpongeBob SquarePants says he is fully capable of finding out what happened. 3 hours later, Natasha Romanoff, in full scuba gear, descends beneath the Bikini Atoll to reach Bikini Bottom. While at first, her enormous size in relation to the citizens of Bikini Bottom is a bit of a problem, she uses a special gadget she got on loan from Hank Pym and shrinks down to a more appropriate height. She investigates the scene and gets a far-off look in her eyes. "What's wrong, Black Widow?" says SpongeBob. "Nothing," says Natasha. "It's just this place. It's just like Budapest. Just like my ledger. Budapest. Bikini Bottom. It's so much."
"There, there," says Patrick, who turns to SpongeBob and says, "She seems nice."
"I'll find that formula, Mr. Krabs," says Natasha, "but I'll need some help."
"You have my rock," says Patrick.
"And my bubble gun," says Sandy.
"And my square pants," says SpongeBob,
and they form the new Moist Avengers. "First, we need a lead," says Natasha.
"It's Plankton. He did it," says Sandy.
"Something that can really start us off down the right path," says Natasha.
"No, seriously, it's Plankton. He tries this all the time," says Sandy.
"Wait," says Natasha. "Who is that?" SpongeBob looks to see where she's pointing. It's Squidward.
"Oh, him? That's Squidward, my neighbor and co-worker."
Natasha's eyes narrow, and in a heartbeat, she's got Squidward in a 7-tentacle arm bar. "Where's the formula?" she yells. Squidward, unable to answer due to racking sobs of pain, whimpers. SpongeBob turns to Patrick and says,
"How long do you think this is gonna last?"
5 hours later.
Natasha, SpongeBob, and gang are outside the Chum Bucket. They see that inside the building, Plankton is gloating about something and talking to a mysterious figure, clearly a human who has also been shrunk down. But this one has a cool skull mask kind of thing on, and he's got a sword and a shield too. "Taskmaster," says Natasha.
"I can take him," says Patrick.
"No, you can't. I need a distraction," says Natasha.
"Hey, Sandy, could you use that bubble gun to hide us and maybe draw out the Taskmaster?" says SpongeBob.
"Boy, howdy," says Sandy, and she does just that. Plankton, suspicious, sends Taskmaster out of the Chum Bucket. "Romanoff, it's going to be a pleasure to bury you at sea," says Taskmaster.
"This guy does not seem nice," says Patrick.
What follows is a cool underwater fight between Natasha and Taskmaster. Except Taskmaster can learn how other people fight instantly and then counter it. So all of Natasha's attacks are countered. "It's no use," she says. SpongeBob's eyes narrow.
"I'll take care of it,"
and he steps forward. Taskmaster, laughing, prepares to dispatch SpongeBob. Except SpongeBob fights like really weird. I mean, he changes shape, he blows bubbles, he goofs around, and Taskmaster, trying to copy his opponent, quickly wears himself out, and in an attempt to change his shape, ruptures his spleen, and All right, so he passes out because this is a kid's show and I'm told I can't kill anyone. SpongeBob, you did it, says Patrick. And Natasha, determined, walks into the chum bucket. Plankton, intimidated by the team, discovers the formula behind the chum bucket counter. That man must have dropped this in here. I am sure I didn't know how else it could even be here. Natasha roughs him up a bit. The team returns to the Krusty Krab, triumphant. The end.
One, that was brilliant. Two, I'm really glad that we don't do video as of right now for these episodes, because people would have seen me doing like a little squee face and dance every time you did a SpongeBob impression. That was adorbs.
So fun story, like my old co-host for Tech Stuff, Chris Paulette, he would do a SpongeBob impression at the beginning of every podcast. Cause I'm like, you ready to go? He'd go, I'm ready. And so it was just, I had never watched an episode of SpongeBob before I did Tech Stuff. And it was just my co-host Chris Paulette saying it over and over that finally got me to watch it.
Do you like SpongeBob?
It's adorable and I love it. I wasn't like one of those stoners who got really into it and like just loved to watch it. But I think that the absurd humor is fantastic in SpongeBob. I find the show to be really joyful and silly. And I love the things like the narrator coming in to talk about the passage of time, which is why I had to throw it into my script. Because those little touches, I think, are what really make the show really funny.
I used to dislike SpongeBob, but it's not because of the humor or the writing or anything like that. I like ridiculous humor and I like how off the wall and outside the box they think. But it was just the animation was ugly to me.
Well, and they also they do occasionally go into that sort of humor of the disgusting, right? Like you get a little bit of the stuff that you would see in something like Ren and Stimpy, though not quite to the grotesque lengths that Ren and Stimpy went to. Or even, you know, Disney did their little retro style cartoons, Mickey Mouse cartoons. Those can get into the little bit of the grotesque too. So
yeah,
it's a style that just kind of, it's interesting because its popularity has stuck around so long. Because Ren and Stimpy, you know, that's like 30 years old, 40 years old now, yeah. 30 at least.
That style's popularity and sticking around has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. No, I mean, the idea of like, let's do a quick, an extreme close up on someone's nostril and show nose hairs and boogers. Doesn't really appeal to me that much either, but the humor is fantastic.
Well, that being said, we have come to the end of all of the things that we want to talk to you about
for this week.
But if you want to talk back to us about any of those things, you should reach out and do so, whether it's sharing your version of a SpongeBob Black Widow mashup or telling us your thoughts on traveling to space or some topics you'd like us to talk about. How can they reach us, Jonathan?
Well, you can do it via the emails. The email address for the show is lnc@iheartmedia.com. You can drop us a line on Twitter. Our handle there is lnc_podcast. Or you can let us know on Facebook or Instagram, where we are Large Nerdron Collider. And Ariel's got her finger on the pulse of all of those, except for the email. That's my job.
Yes. And we really hope to hear from you. And also remember, if you like us, to subscribe, if you haven't already, and tell your friends to subscribe too, because the more people we've got talking to us, the more fun everybody has.
And if you don't like us, tell your enemies to subscribe to us, because honestly, we don't care.
Yeah, the numbers are good.
Until next time, I'm Jonathan, numbers are all that matter to me, Strickland.
And I am Ariel, get this sponge out of here, Caston.
The Large Nerdron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Caston. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.